Welcome to Business Watch. Well, South Africans will soon be facing a possible return to darkness after Eskom warned of looming system constraints due to the extended unavailability of the Coburg nuclear power station's units this year. That's due to planned outages. This as Eskom has applied for an electricity price increase of 20.5% for the 2023 financial year. That will commence on the 1st of April, and that's no April Fools, as the utility continues to look for ways out of its balance sheet bind. This remains the single biggest binding constraint on the South African economy at the moment, and Denker Capital released a report late last year proposing a solution to Eskom's balance sheet problem, a debt for equity swap. And I'm joined now by Madeleine Sessions of Denker Capital, energy analyst Chris Yelland, Sitembiso Garane, who's head of listed credit at Future Growth, and Peter Becker, who's spokesperson for the Coburg Alert Alliance, an alliance of organizations and individuals that are concerned about the safety at the Coburg power station, just to talk about the energy lay of the land as we head into the new year. Chris, welcome back, and set the scene for us here. When we look at the lay of the tariff land, what does the latest tariff hike entail? As we know, Eskom feels entitled to recover what it calls prudent costs, but many would argue that a bloated salary bill and mistakes at Kusile and Medupi weren't incurred prudently. What is the lay of the land when it comes to tariffs?
Yeah, thanks very much. Look, there are two issues currently facing us and the country in regard to tariffs. So the first matter is the tariff application, the multi-year price determination, MYPD5 application by Eskom, which effectively in round figures is to increase the price of electricity on the 1st of April by 20%. There is, of course, another issue, and that is a number of court rulings that have sent decisions back to NERSA, and we are waiting now, in fact, one particular instance of an appeal where the court ruled in favor of Eskom. NERSA has appealed it to the appeal court, and we're waiting for a decision. And effectively, if this decision goes Eskom's way, there will be further price increases as a result of price increases that the regulator denied of Eskom some years ago. So we're really looking at the possibility of not only the 20% increase, but another 20%, up to perhaps 40%, depending on the timing of these adjustments that the courts are imposing. But I don't want to be too alarmist. I don't think Eskom are going to get the 20% that they've asked for. And I think the regulator and the courts will probably phase in the other increases over a period of time as to minimize its impact. But we are in for a very significant increase on the 1st of April.
And that just, you know, it shows you the kind of binding constraint that we're talking about here. When we look at administered price increases, the most significant over the last decade is certainly in the energy sector. Whenever I chat to any business owner, they wring their hands at these swinging costs that continue to rise. When you look at this, Peter, and you come on board as an expert on Coburg, and the Alliance released a statement calling Eskom's utterances on Coburg confusing and disingenuous this morning. Why is that?
Thank you. Well, firstly, they've described this as a standard refueling outage, but a standard refueling takes 4 to 5 weeks, and they've said this is going to be 5 to 6 months offline. So that's why it's confusing, because it doesn't seem really, to be honest, to call it the standard refueling. To us, that's like taking your car to the mechanic for a refueling, and while they're busy, they'll replace the gearbox. It's actually a refurbishment outage that they're looking at. So that's just one of the confusing aspects of their statement.
Is Coburg as reliable as Eskom makes out? It always refers to Coburg as one of the more reliable power plants in its fleet.
Yeah, that's a really interesting question, you know, and if you look at the stats, the one unit of Coburg was down for more than 50% last year with one problem and another. And if you look at 2019 and 2018, it was down for about a third of the time during those times. So, no, it's actually not particularly reliable. And there's quite a problem, because even a standard refueling, never mind this five-month outage, but a standard 4 or 5 week refueling means you have to have some generating capacity to cover the entire reactor that's down for that time. So the question is, if it's going to be down every 18 months and you can cover for it for 4 weeks Why can't you cover for 5 weeks or 6 weeks or 52 weeks? So in effect, in the new kind of energy system, there will be flexible generation facilities that will really mean there's no need for a large central nuclear plant like Kubik.
Absolutely. That's what we're trying to head towards with this drip-drip reform that we see in the energy sector. Chris, I want to come back to you and just zoom out. So there's an example of just one of Eskom's multitude of aging power plants across the country. This is really one of the major issues facing Eskom at the moment, is that because of its cash flow constraints, it just is struggling to keep up with the routine and regular maintenance that needs to happen.
Yeah, look, there's also a question of diminishing returns to maintaining very old power stations that are in fact quite small in terms of a modern power station, you know, has units of 600, 700, even 800 megawatts. But these old ones that require all this maintenance, they have generators of, you know, like 200 megawatts. So the same amount of effort that goes into this in terms of people and planning and spares and equipment, this effort overhead is being allocated to a rather small set of old power stations. And there is some argument that, in fact, Eskom would be better off simply decommissioning these old ones as soon as possible and reallocating its full resources to its newer power plants, as well as to ensuring and making available grid connections and land, as Eskom has talked about, for new power plants to replace the old ones. And that comes in the form of wind and solar PV and battery energy storage and gas to power. And that, of course, is the future for the power sector. That is variable renewable energy plus flexible generation capacity in the form of battery storage and gas to power.
Mudley, turning now to Eskom's balance sheet, and firstly, Eskom's severe cash flow problem. As I referenced in my introduction, Denker had a look at this and proposed a solution. Just remind us how severe these cash flow constraints are on Eskom.
They're pretty substantial. Just looking at the 2021 financial numbers, they generated 200 billion in revenue, and they had operating expenditure of 198 billion. Then they have an interest expense of 54 billion. So just on operating expenditure, they are pretty much cleaning out all their revenue. So the cash flow constraints are substantial. There is really very little room for any error in managing this business. And as it is, the business is sort of really being relieved by government converting some of its subordinated debt into equity as capital injections into the business. So cash flow constraints are substantial, and they're not going away unless we fundamentally resolve the balance sheet.
And in any ordinary business, what you would find is the business going to shareholders and tapping them for injections of capital. We know the South African government has done that to an extent, but really is in a situation where it can't borrow anymore to keep on propping Eskom up. And you believe it's possible to solve the balance sheet problems through a debt for equity swap. It's not the first time a debt for equity swap has been put on the table. What are you proposing here?
Yeah, I just want to, before what I propose, I want to say, you know, any other private business would not have built out such a substantial capacity plan on debt. It is very, very risky to take on such big projects with debt funding. So typically you would see projects being funded by equity if they are transforming the capacity of a business. So that is the first thing I think we need to bear in mind, is that going back a decade, Eskom's capital decision making was very different from what would have happened in a private business. So what my proposal aims to address is very much twofold. One is to relieve the balance sheet constraints of Eskom without leaving the debt holder worse off. So the lender has made a loan, a guaranteed loan to Eskom. So government's guaranteed that these loans will be repaid. And we think that needs to be honored. And so what we are proposing is a structure that leaves the debt holders no worse off and potentially better off, and leaves government fundamentally better off as well. So the proposal is convert the debt to equity and write an option to the debt holder that says, if at the time that your debt would have matured, your equity is worth less than your debt would have been, Government will top you up that difference. So if your equity is worth 90 and your debt would have been worth 100, government pays you that 10 rand as a difference. Now, why this is better for the debt holder is that if your equity is worth 110 at the time that your debt would have matured, you have made that difference. So you are 10 rand better off than you would have been in the alternative. Why is this better for government? Well, one, government doesn't have to continue funding debt equity conversions at Eskom, so its own debt will be converted into equity. And the second thing is government doesn't have to buy back all the debt on maturity if there isn't enough resources within Eskom. So government simply has to pay a fraction, the difference between what the debt and equity might be worth if it is negative in that environment. If it is positive, government is not on the hook for anything.
What about the, and we often, when we think of these things, are told that it's not possible because of a range of reasons, political, economy, risk, but one of the most substantial being these default clauses and complicated cross-default clauses that we have that guarantee so much of Eskom's debt.
Yeah. So it is this is a legal question that I don't have the expertise to answer. I think that in the sense of debt-to-equity conversion with no leaving no debt holder worse off would be seen as honouring that guarantee. You have an instrument that continues to pay the exact same return as you have now. In addition to that return guarantee that you have, you also have voting rights in you. So I think, you know, legally one might, there might be some grey matter here, which I think a legal expert would be answer. But certainly from an economic reality standpoint, the debt holder is no worse off. Now, I think that gets rid of some of this. What has been said is some of the concerns about a debt equity swap is how do you honor the securities that has been granted to the debt holders? And I think if you do the debt equity conversion, essentially all the assets of the business becomes the security for the equity holder. So again, the debt equity conversion leaves nobody worse off. You convert the debt, the security that has been granted to the debt holders become the security for the equity holder.
So it's not unsecured. Yeah, absolutely.
It's not an unsecured loan.
Absolutely, and it's always why, you know, in traditional corporate finance structuring, if you're an equity holder, you are generally at the back of the queue. Behind those senior and mezzanine debt providers. Sitembiso, Future Growth is one of the larger investors into listed debt in the country, and particularly Eskom here. You've got this proposal that means the return on the bond is guaranteed today. The return on the equity conversion would be no less than the bond would have been worth, maybe even higher at that date. What do you make of this proposal?
Thanks a lot for having me again. I think there's a lot of solutions that have been bandied around, and this is certainly one of the solutions that ourselves have also looked at. But obviously, after looking at the impediments that may come into the solution via the fact that the lenders still have to vote to actually give that, over and above that, there still needs to be a business case that an investor would want to convert this. I think I liken to this to a conversion of a bullet debt payment into a zero coupon. And a zero coupon, you would sort of allow Eskom a debt repayment reprieve for a period of time and maybe pay that bullet after 5 years. I think this is a solution that would definitely can be worked if there's a political will and also a will from other stakeholders. But I do think that it may take time to actually get to that. So over and above that, and other solutions that you can think of, I think after considering all of these, I think as a House of Future Growth, which includes a haircut to investors, an asset disposal, including this debt equity swap, we agree to that. Look, a government solution is the best one and the quickest one to actually get to this position. I think Madele earlier on talked about Eskom's issues. Eskom currently generates around 30 billion from its operation, but their debt service requirement is 37 billion. Okay. So that is definitely not enough to actually even service their debt services. So there needs to be an immediate reduction in the debt amount currently for investors or equity investors to even have confidence to get into an arrangement like that. So I do think it can be worked out, but I don't think, it will be a quick solution. After considering all these things, I think there are other solutions that may come quicker.
And that's, again, coming back to the tariff application, Chris Yelland, why we see Eskom and, its CFO continually saying we need these tariff increases to help us become a more sustainable going concern. The problem is the cost overall that's dispersed and diffused through the rest of the economy by having to continually stomach ever-rising electricity costs. They're obviously legal and technical challenges, but putting those to one side, I think one of the biggest challenges that we see around Eskom is inertia. We discuss this almost ad nauseum, yet we don't see the kind of requisite government will to move with any urgency.
I think you make a good point, and just as an example to that, Eskom itself says that it has restructured and is ready to start this separate transmission business as an independent or as a separate subsidiary within Eskom Holdings and with a completely independent board. And as it's done this, because the roadmap asked them to do this by the end of 2021, and it's done it. But we're now waiting for government. The shareholder has also got to sign this off, and it hasn't done so yet. So again, we are seeing this inertia within government, even bigger inertia than that of Eskom. But Eskom seems to be moving quite aggressively. But now government is holding things up. And getting to this, this whole question of financing, I'm no financial expert by a long shot, but just I think an added complication is this whole restructuring of Eskom, the separation of the transmission business out of Eskom. This is the so-called jewel in the crown of Eskom, and that complicates the whole financial arrangements that have been made. But I'm no expert to be able to offer any solutions in that regard. Getting back to the tariff, Eskom wants more tariffs. There is not going to be one solution to Eskom's financial woes. It's going to need to be a whole lot of things at the same time, including putting up the tariffs, selling assets, listing on the stock exchange, government equity injections. All of these things I think are part of the solution. I don't think there's any silver bullet or single solution to this problem. And we're kind of between the devil and the deep blue sea. Either we have a 20% tariff increase, or government has to put in more equity, and either way we pay. It's either through the tariff or as taxpayers.
Madeleine, and just to bring you back into the conversation here, there was something that you wrote in the solution that there are lots of balanced and flexible funds for whom certain constraints about swapping out their holdings would be irrelevant. Is that really the way things work? Because I'm reminded here of what we saw with Steinhoff and other examples, that actually did become a bit of a binding constraint.
I mean, there are funds that have exclusive bond mandates. They may only lend to companies. They may not be equity investors in company. I think those are real constraints, and they will be binding in some instances. The single largest lender, in my understanding, to Eskom is the PIC, and I don't know that restriction applies there. I also think it is the sort of thing where, on institutional mandates, you can go to the investors and explain the payoff structure and ask for the flexibility around that. I don't know enough about that to be clear, to be saying firmly yes or no to that. But to me, these are problems that can be overcome. The problems that are much harder to overcome is not as return on equity. The return on assets at Eskom is diabolically low. It is a very poor return business. And at no point, as they have raised tariffs, have returns gone up in this business. So cost-effective tariffs, we throw that term around very easily. We don't really ever look at whether or not it's a cost-effective structure. How expensive is it to generate energy relative to what sort of energy costs could be in a more efficient operation? And just to Chris's point about, yes, this sort of splitting out of transmission as a separate entity very much complicates the financing matters, because the debt holders have that asset base as security for their loans. If you do the equity conversion, if you convert all your debt to equity before you do the split and then you split, you've not transformed any of the asset base that is secured or provided a security to the lender. So if you do the debt to equity conversion and then separate the businesses, the debt holders are essentially in exactly the same position. They have a security in the distribution business, they have security in the transmission business, and they have security in the generation business. Three separate businesses, and post-listing, they can trade and sell and buy whatever they want to hold the sort of mix of assets that they want. What we can't hope for is for things to continue as they are and yet for things to change.
So
we cannot leave government in charge of Eskom with its existing mandate and its existing in procurement structures, etc., and hope for different outcomes. So
I think you touched on a very...
Things need to change.
A few very good points, but Sitembisa, I want to come back to a very important one, the fact that you can't generate a sufficient equity return from an organization that has this declining asset base. I mean, that is the bottom line here. And you mentioned earlier that there are perhaps maybe quicker solutions that we might hope to see applied to the Eskom conundrum. Can you just share what some of those are that potentially Future Growth is engaging with and thinking about?
I think one solution that we arrived at, that government needs to come up with a very drastic solution, which is come on board and bail Eskom out. So we've considered the fact that government has sort of been trying to assist Eskom with some capital injection over some time, but obviously those have not been sufficient to actually arrest the situation summarily. It has been just kicking the can down the road until Eskom gets into the next problem, and then they also then give them an additional cash. Right now, Eskom have guided that they actually need to reduce their interest-bearing liabilities by 200 billion to get to a sustainable net debt to EBITDA ratio. That needs to come from government. Plus, I think it's cheaper for government to raise South African government bonds and pay cheaper than, you know, raising debt at a government guaranteed debt at Eskom balance sheet at a marginal spread that is much more expensive, because from a risk perspective, we as investors are supposed to treat that liability as a government debt because it is guaranteed by a government. But simply migrating that into the sovereign balance sheet is also cost effective for the government. I understand, I think Medele's solution, even though it is a practical solution in the event that government is not in a position to do that, but it will still have some costs to it. But in this case, I think we do suggest that, look, it is much more beneficial for government to come up not only with practical solution, but with cost effective solutions.
Madeleine, what do you make of Sitembisa's proposal?
Yeah, I'm going to sound very rude, and I don't mean to, but the solution that Sitembisa is proposing is a solution for the debt holders. What I am proposing is a solution for the energy problem. So a conversion of debt to equity by the existing lenders should enable additional generation capacity to be harnessed as well, as additional equity capital could become available to the new three separate entities. But we're solving far more problems, and government would dilute its stake in Eskom. So its influence over decisions being made at this company would be dramatically reduced. And one of the things that we know about the private sector is that it is a far more efficient and effective operator than government. So if we are just trying to solve, I am a lender, I don't want to take any losses at this entity that has too much debt, then I completely agree with Sitembisa. Government put in the money and essentially buy us out and issue government guaranteed debt in order to do so.
Yeah.
If you're trying to solve the energy crisis and mitigate the risk to the fiscus, I think my solution provides a lot more box ticking far more things will get achieved if we actually sort of consider a more comprehensive solution.
And I think you touch again on a very important point. The major binding political economy constraint is that you're diluting government out of the picture here. And one will cynically say, this is exactly why we're seeing these kinds of solutions being blocked. I just want to go around the table then. Peter, what do you make of this and overall where we are as we try and reach a much more sustainable energy picture in the country that isn't continually used as this binding constraint?
Thank you. Well, one thing, obviously my focus is on Coburg, and one thing that struck me when the figure of 200 billion was mentioned is this refurbishment or the life extension is estimated to cost somewhere between 20 and 40 billion. So what is that? That's 10 or 20% of that figure if they just suspended this whole operation and the life extension. So what I'm also quite puzzled about is why does it always seem to be a discussion about IPPs for renewables and Eskom for nuclear and coal? Why can't Eskom take the 20 to 40 billion and build 2 gigawatts of solar? Obviously, that's a simplification, but why isn't Eskom developing its own long-term renewable instead of trying to get these old dinosaur plants to have a few more years of operation?
Very good points, those. Chris?
Yeah, just to answer that question, I don't think Eskom has the technical or project management skills at this point to manage 20 simultaneous or 30 or 40 simultaneous renewable energy projects. There are skills involved in this, and the competitors out there can do this remarkably efficiently and operate globally. And I just don't think that Eskom has that capacity, even if it had the money. I don't think that's the best way of proceeding. I really think we need to also start looking beyond just Eskom, but towards the whole electricity supply industry, and that also includes the electricity distribution industry. Truly, if we don't look at this holistically, we're not solving the big picture. The problems in the municipal distribution sector are very, very significant, and we tend to forget about them and concentrate on the big elephant in the room. Yep. But the municipalities are lots of little elephants too.
Absolutely. Don't forget the little ones, as we've heard the finance minister also talk about this more holistic picture. When we do talk about Eskom, he says, no, we really need to look at things far more holistically. Well, that's where we're going to have to leave it. That was energy analyst Chris Yellen, and joined around the table by Madeleine Sessions, portfolio manager at Denker Capital, Sitimbiso Garane, who's head of listed credit at Future Growth, and Peter Becker, who's spokesperson for the Coburg Alert Alliance, giving us the lay of the energy land here on Business Watch.